This is the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast, Episode 11.
You're listening to the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast, the number one resource for running a profitable home recording studio. Now your hosts, Brian Hood and Chris Graham.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast. I am Brian Hood, and in case you missed this, I did a live workshop yesterday. I actually did two live online workshops yesterday. And the workshop was titled, How to Make a Living from Your Existing Audio Skills Without the Need for a Fancy Studio or Expensive Gear. If you missed this workshop and you want to see a replay of that, I'm going to have a replay up for the next 48 hours only. You can get to that replay by going to the sixfigurehomestudio.com/replay, R-E-P-L-A-Y. And I'm recording this before I actually do the workshops, but I'm just going to say that I'm assuming the workshops both went well. They were both a lot of fun, and the students got a lot out of them. As the time that I record this right now, we have something like 500 people registered for the workshop. And who knows, we may have 1,000 people registered by the time I actually go live on Monday. But if you missed it or you want to watch the replay, just go to the sixfigurehomestudio.com/replay. And that'll be up and available to watch for the next 48 hours from the time this episode airs. So today's episode is all about increasing your studio's income. And I think this is one of my favorite episodes personally. It's good to hear this stuff. It's good to get a reminder of all the things that I should be doing because I'm not doing all of the things we talked about today. I have in the past. And even today, as I do this, I'm thinking of things that I need to do in my life right now based on the episode that I just heard. This is one of those episodes that takes action on your part. This is not a passive episode that you can just simply listen to in your car or listen to while you're doing laundry. This one is probably going to take, you're going to need to take notes. You're going to need to write things down. So keep that in mind as you get into this. But I think no matter what, even if you can't write notes down right now, you are going to get a lot out of this episode. So here is my conversation with Chris Graham.
Brian, if you had to sum up for our listeners what their problem is, why they're listening to the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast, in the most condensed, shortest possible sentence, what would you say?
They need to earn more money. I mean, even a Six Figure Home Studio would like to earn more money. There is no cap on what you would like to earn. There's a cap on what you need to earn, but there's no cap on what you would like to earn. So I think this is a good episode to talk about things you can do to change that, things you can do to improve your income, to increase your studio's income in the simplest ways.
Yeah. And I know I'm like thinking every time we record an episode, I'm thinking back to Chris Graham, myself from 10, 15 years ago and the lies I believed and the unwise things that I thought were true. And immediately 10 years ago, Chris Graham would have said, you know, 25-year-old Chris Graham would have said, oh, it's not about the money. Y'all are sellouts. Y'all are evil human beings. And Chris Graham from 10 years ago didn't have any kids and was a newlywed and was comfortable eating the meagerest of fare. And I hadn't really caught on yet that this sort of like make art for a living game is about survival. It's about doing it for a long time and ensuring that you don't go out of business so you can keep doing it. So that when you have the opportunity to work on a really amazing project that you're there for it. That it wasn't like, oh crap, I'm working at Starbucks or McDonald's to make ends meet and I'm not available because I flamed out. So this make more money thing, it's not about selling out. It's about longevity. How can you stay in the game so that you have the opportunity to work with somebody when that opportunity knocks?
Yeah. And just being able to be your own boss to a degree. I mean, you still have clients who are really your boss, but you don't have a boss breathing down your neck every second of the day telling you what to do and when to do it. It's the freedom of being able to kind of make your own schedule, be your own boss, and be the captain of your own ship. That's the other reason why a lot of people are drawn towards creating a business out of the passion for audio that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for me, if you ask me, well, why do you have your own business, Chris? I would answer in a single word, freedom. That's it. Freedom. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And for me, I'm a family man. I got three kids. I got a wife. It's the most important thing to me. And I want to know that I can spend time with them and that when my kids are old, they'll think back and say, my dad was a good dad. That's what I want in life. And that my wife will say, my husband was a good husband. And having a business and being in control of what that looks like affords me that opportunity. And I couldn't be any more grateful for that freedom. So I think what this conversation comes down to, how do we make enough money to stay in business, let alone to become a six-figure home studio? We can condense it down to the simplest terms. How much do you make per hour?
Yep. It's that, what is your base hourly pay for every hour you work? No matter what you're working on, whether it's audio related or not audio related, if it's on your business, if it's in your studio, you are working. What do you make per hour? What do you sum all of those numbers up? What does it come down to is that hourly pay?
Yeah. And I think the really important concept here is it's easy for us that were, you know, raised going to public school and watched friends, you know, like we've been conditioned by society to believe that when you're in a business, it's similar to a job. And in a job, you show up and no matter how high quality your work is or whatever work that you happen to be doing that day for your job, you make the same amount per hour. When you run a business, it's not like that.
Exactly.
Every task that you have has a dollar amount attached to it of how much that task is worth on the free market.
And I had this conversation with one of my students one-on-one yesterday. We had a 20-30 minute call on Skype, and he was in this crossroads where he wanted to quit his day job that was a full-time 40-hour a week day job, but he has that internal fear of not, you know, it's the getting away from that steady paycheck. And I had to tell him, okay, at your day job, if you've been out for the last 9 years, full-time, you know, I'm not going to ask, I didn't ask any specific numbers. I just knew the general numbers of what he earned. And I could make a lot of assumptions that he would just nod that I was correct. But I would say that, okay, you've been there 9 years. You've probably gotten about a 3% raise per year, which is just right at inflation. But over the last 8 years, if you haven't averaged a 3% raise per year, you are actually getting paid the same or less than you got paid 8 years ago. Even if the number's higher, the value of that money is now lower than what it was 8 or 9 years ago. And so I told him, you know, 5, 10 years from now, you may be in the same boat where you can go in 40 hours a week. You can earn your set $15, $20, $25 an hour, whatever it is. I think it was around probably $15 to $20 an hour. And you can always earn that and you'll always have that cap on the top of it. You're never going to go above that number,
yeah.
But it is that nice safety net. But the other side of the coin is if you happen to quit your job, and he was actually really good at what he does. He had a nice studio, he had a nice client base that he did on the part-time, just a few hours a night he could actually work on his studio or in a studio. And if he went that route and quit his day job, to be able to replace that, I would say like pretty low, as far as studio terms go, that pretty low income from his day job, it was an insanely low amount of work, like 3 songs per month at the rate that he currently charged. So he would have to do to replace that income, or maybe 4 songs a month. And when you break it down that way, it's not a terrifying thing. But the point I want to get at here is when you have your own business, when you are the captain of your own ship, there is a very, very high number that you have a limit on your hourly pay, especially if you start implementing the things we're going to be talking about today, because it is completely up to you what you make per hour, if you're willing to do what it takes to get that number up. And that's really what we're going to talk about today, is making the most of every single project you work on to get that hourly pay up. So you can, if you want to move away from your day job or completely drop your day job and do this full time, or if you're already doing this full time, the ways that you can make your business more efficient, make your income higher per hour. So you can either work less and make more and spend more time with your friends and family and doing things you love, or at the very least just earn more and put some more away for a rainy day.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we have some homework for you guys. And I think that this is a really, really, really valuable activity. And it's very simple. Sit down with a pad of paper and write out all the things that you do to make money for your studio.
I do an Evernote file. I like Evernote over a pad and paper, but I'm new school.
Whatever you want to use, just make a list. So if you are running a small recording studio, you are setting up microphones, you are EQing vocals, you are cleaning up microphone cables, you're coiling them up in a specific way and hanging them in specific spots on the wall, right? As we should.
For me, the easiest way to do this, by the way, literally just think through a session. Say you are recording an album for a band. What are you doing from start to finish for that entire project? Or even just think about a single. A single's a smaller project, but you're doing a lot of the same stuff that you would do for a full length. You're just doing more of it for the full length. What do you do? Like, what are, from every single point, from point A to point Z, or Zed if you're from Canada, what do you do every step of the way? And that includes getting things prepped for the session, getting things coiled up or uncoiled, you know, at the end of the session, coiling up the files, cleaning the bathrooms, getting the, you know, all these little things that really do add up. I really want you to think through every single step of what you do. And if it's not recording, if it's just mixing and mastering or just mastering, like Chris, think through it from an A to Z or A to Z kind of perspective and think about what you do every single step of the way. And continue on, Chris.
So you make this list, and then next to each one of these items, you need to make a guess about how much that task would pay if it were a full-time job. So for example, if you, on every session, go in and by hand edit out all the silences on the vocals so that there's no background noise. Say you prefer how that sounds to using, you know, a gate or something like that. What's that worth on the free market? Probably $11 an hour.
Oh my God.
Tops.
That's, yeah, tops. That's very much like if you have basic DAW skills, you can do that.
Yeah. Do you spend 5 minutes per day coiling mic cables? Well, for 5 minutes, you just made minimum wage.
Yep.
Do you spend, 15 minutes per week labeling files? It's a minimum wage job.
Cleaning toilets.
Yeah.
Cleaning anything in your house, cleaning it up. Your pay on that is very minimal.
Yeah. So if you guys probably have put this together already, but that list of tasks that you do to get paid, some of those tasks are worth a lot of money per hour. Making a great sounding vocal in the mix, pretty hard to do. It's worth a lot of money. Great sounding drums in the mix, worth a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
Coaching a vocalist to deliver a heartfelt performance that's unbelievably emotional, hard to do, worth a lot of money per hour.
Keeping people encouraged through the entire project.
Yes.
You know, basically playing psychiatrist for the band.
Yes, exactly. It's most of the job.
Yeah.
So if you take a list of all these things that you do and you put an hourly rate next to each one of them, if you average it out, it should equal what you make per hour if you did this right. It should be pretty close. If you want to make more per hour, it's pretty simple. You need to cross out things on the list and stop doing them that are minimum wage jobs. And in many cases, minimum wage is generous. There are many tasks that we do that are worth less than a minimum wage. You couldn't pay someone to do them. They're so menial. And in some cases, I don't do this, but there are a lot of people who outsource stuff to other countries. And people work for less than the minimum wage. So minimum wage is not even a relevant term here. But for most of us, minimum wage is a great place to start to say, oh, when I coil up my cables or when I sweep the entire studio or when I...
Or when you think about less than minimum wage, what do you think interns do? Interns are unpaid people to do that sort of stuff, which I'm not going to argue on whether or not that's fair or something you should do. I'm just saying that that is something that interns have done for ages now.
Yeah. So a good example me and Brian were joking about before the podcast was phase alignment of drums. For any of you guys that have ever done this, it's pretty tedious work.
It's so tedious.
To get the drum mics phase aligned. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it.
Even worse is phase aligning MIDI.
That's the worst.
MIDI with drum mics. That's the worst thing in the world. But yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great example. Aligning MIDI with, if you're going to, you know, trigger samples for your drums to hit at just the right spot so that you don't get weird
phasing issues,
on different drum hits. So like something like this, you have to understand that everything that you do has a number value attached to it, how much it's worth, and all the things that you do averages out to your hourly income. If you want to do this for the long term, you can't do it on $12 per hour average income.
Nope.
Can't possibly stay in business long enough to make a career out of this. So you need to make a list of these things and start crossing things out by either eliminating them, delegating them, or automating them.
And before we get into this, I also want you to challenge yourself with this. I know a lot of you, especially those of you that have a day rate or a flat per song rate, let's look at a flat per song rate. You say I charge $500 a song to fully produce, edit, track, mix, master a song. That's a low rate to me, but that's some people are around that rate. So I'm just using that for this example because it's easy math. So you charge $500 per song to fully produce a band in your studio from start to finish. Well, you start thinking through the project and you're thinking that, okay, so we get the drums set up and then we record drums and then we edit drums and then we do maybe bass next and then guitar or vice versa. And then we move to vocals and then we'll be editing things up and I'll do pitch correction. And then the project's more or less done after I start mixing and mastering. And then we do revisions and then we're done. Well, the problem with that is that's not all your work. that's maybe all you think you do. But realistically, when you own your own business, when you are the business owner, there is so much more that you are responsible for outside of the actual projects you're working on. And these are things you're really getting paid $0 an hour for, but they're worth some amount of money. Some are high value, some are not. So for example, it would be all of the things working on your business that we talked about in past episodes, working in your business versus working on your business. Working in your business is that $500 per song that you're getting from this artist, where you're working in your business, recording, editing, mixing, mastering. But working on your business, no one's paying you for that. That is what I would consider unpaid work, although there is a huge advantage to doing that. But these are all things you have to account into the amount of time you're spending with your business. So I say all this to say, you may think you're getting X amount per hour when you're working 8 hour days. Say you work 8 hours in a day to do this $500, whatever 500 divided by eight is, that's what you think your hourly pay is. But realistically, it's not, because you're doing all this back and forth email exchange for all these projects, doing your follow-ups. If you're doing any sort of paid advertising, managing those campaigns, setting those campaigns up, getting the ads for that, getting the copy done for that. If you're doing any sort of cleaning for your place, if you're doing any sort of taxes, if you're doing your bookkeeping, all of these things are things that you're responsible for. And it really does add up to a lot of time at the end of the day. And you really have to think through every single one of these tasks and come up with a value for what it is really worth on the free market. Not necessarily what someone would get paid full time doing it for, but what is the free market value of this if I were to get rid of this to someone else?
Yeah. So I think this conversation is tough. This is a tough thing for me to keep my ego in check. And to say, you know, I believe that nobody can do the things that I do as well as I can, so I could never teach anybody. It's something I constantly battle with and is a big struggle for me. But there's another issue at play here. And that issue is a cultural one in our field of work. And that is that the only true awesome people do it all. And so, Brian, question for you.
Yeah.
We got Bob and Steve, two fictional characters. Bob is pretty good at
Call the second guy Russ?
Okay, Bob and Russ.
Thanks.
Bob and Russ both run home studios. Bob is pretty good at everything you need to do to run a home studio. He edits, he mixes, he masters. He's even a really good janitor, and he keeps that studio spick and span. Mm. That's Bob. Russ, on the
I changed my mind. We're doing Winston.
Okay, Winston. Winston also owns a home studio, and he sounds pretty smart based on his name. Winston is extremely good at teaching other people how to do some of the things he does. Who do you respect more?
I respect them both, because Bob did do a lot to learn all of the things that he's great at. And it does take a very talented person to do that. But I have to respect Winston more, because he understands what it takes to be successful. And you're going to explain why that is.
Yeah. So there's a great story that I love about a clockmaker. And the story goes that a long, long time ago, hundreds of years ago, there was a guy who had this amazing ability. And you could walk up to him on the street and you could say, Rutherford, we're going to call him Rutherford. What time is it? And Rutherford would look up in the sky. He'd look at the sun and he'd say 3:14 and 17 seconds. He could look at the sun and tell you exactly what time it was.
What?
So Rutherford was the man. He was a pretty popular guy. Rutherford had a friend named Bob. Bob, on the other hand, figured out how to make sundials. And he would manufacture sundials and he'd sell them to people. And you could look at one of Bob's sundials and you could tell what time it was. Now, on its face, Rutherford, this guy that can look at the sun and tell the time, that's pretty impressive. He's awesome. However, Bob, the sundial maker, is making a bigger impact and is making way more money and should deserve our respect far more. So we need to think about, do you want to be this magical character that can tell the time, or do you want to master this meta skill, which is to find a way to multiply your work? So this is something, you know, I'm preaching to myself right here. I need to understand this on a deeper level. I know that this wasn't taught in school and that I had to read this in books, and that there is deep, deep wisdom in this idea of it's more respectable to be a multiplier than it is to have a really great technical skill.
And so kind of tying it back to that story, which I'm not going to get into the fact that you used Bob for the dumb character in one story and the smart character in the other story, we're going to get past that because that's not confusing at all. But what I will say is, unpacking this story, is that Winstonford.
I don't even know.
Just forget the names. Forget the names. This guy who could look up into the sun and tell the exact time, although very impressive. You're saying that, you know, although it takes some sort of magical talent to be able to do that, you're saying the person who was able to train others to be able to use the sun to determine the time,
yeah,
the guy who could create something, a system actually, or a piece of hardware that enables everyone to be able to look at the shadow on the sundial and say, this is the exact time it is. That's the person who's making the bigger impact. So tying that back to the home studio, you're basically saying the person that can do everything, that can be the magical person that makes everything happen in the studio, is that person that can look at the sun and say, hey, it's exactly this time. And the person who is able to train up others around him or train others to be capable of doing some of these other tasks that we're going to get into actually, or specifically, we're talking about outsourcing now, realistically,
yeah,
or enabling others to do what it is that maybe you're not great at doing, or maybe you shouldn't be doing because there are higher value tasks for you to do. That is the person who made the sundial, the person that is enabling some other person to take care of those things. That is how we're kind of tying this together. I assume you're...
Yeah, absolutely. So I know what probably a lot of you are thinking. Nah, I barely make any money. I can't afford to outsource. I can't afford to hire anybody.
Yep.
Well, you might not make any money because you don't outsource.
Yeah.
Further, not all of the things that you can do to outsource involve you losing money to hire people. Some of the things involve outsourcing to your clients. Some of the things means asking your clients to fill out a form rather than to just Facebook message you. I've mentioned this on the podcast in the past, but when I, on my mastering website, started asking clients when they uploaded, you know, 10 songs for an album to label each file for each song with the track number, that changed my life because I no longer had to go back and forth with the client asking for clarifications on, they sent me a song order with song names, but the file names didn't reflect the song names. And how do I figure out what?
Yeah, because you just have working titles when you're writing these songs and then they don't match the final titles of the songs. And then it's a whole mess trying to get that sorted out. So to kind of bring this back to that original list that you have created in Evernote, or if you're old school, your pen and paper, whatever that is, you've created this list of all the things that you were responsible for in your studio, every single thing, anything you do. And you've tried to at least guesstimate the value of what that is worth to the free market as best you can. And now we're looking at this list and we're saying, okay, in Chris's case, he's looked at this list and he said, okay, so it takes me a lot of time because he works with a lot of projects. It's taken him a lot of time to write the song titles, or at least find the song titles for each of these songs and getting them in order.
So that I master the songs in the right order so that they flow well.
Yep. So one way of looking at it is, okay, this is a very low value task, obviously, because all it takes is an email to the artist and say, hey, what is the actual song order in relation to these working titles you gave me? And then there's some back and forth, and then you're going back and changing the names on the files and maybe reordering it in your DAW. You could hire an assistant for that. And that's very low value tasks that you would have to do. That's one way of looking at it, but then you're paying them to do that. And what Chris is saying here is, instead of paying someone else to do this, he's getting the client to do it in the first place by putting systems into place that basically automate the task.
Yeah.
He's putting it into place where when they book time, they book studio time with him, or they pay for it, they then fill out a form and it specifies, give me the exact song title and order for these tracks.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And there's a huge number of things that you can do like that in any business that, you know, perfect example is there's a really great drive, like gas station restaurant in the Cleveland, Ohio area called Sheetz.
Oh, I love Sheetz so much.
For years, you walk into a Sheetz and you walk up to a computer terminal and you build your own sandwich by selecting the options on the screen. And then someone in the back makes the exact sandwich that you ordered and you pay right at the terminal. It's amazing. Sheetz is outsourcing some of the work to their customers. So that's one way that you can begin to outsource without paying someone to do it. If you're really, really hurting for money and you need to jumpstart your business without hiring an assistant, you can do it that way. Another way that's obvious and a lot of people do is interns. I like to joke that, you know, I am in my hand holding a pen. If I walk outside in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I am, and I throw that pen, it's going to hit somebody who majored in audio production in college, who doesn't have a job in audio production. It's not hard to find people that have a degree or a passion or a technical school degree for this sort of stuff who are looking for employment and who are willing to work for peanuts because there's so many of them.
I had an intern from Belmont. He was a great kid. He came to me wanting to be an intern for me, and I have never taken on interns before that. And honestly, I hadn't taken on since that because I didn't have this list together, the list that we just talked about you writing. And if I would have had that list together of all the things, if I'd have really thought through and brain dumped all of the things that I do on a project and that I'm responsible for in my studio, and then started just circling the ones that he could have done, that he was capable of doing himself at the skill level that he had, he would have been A, a lot more busy. B, he would have probably gotten more out of the internship. And C, I would have probably earned more at the end of the day because I would be doing a lot less stuff. I would be focused more on the high value tasks. And if I didn't earn more, I would at least have a better quality product at the end of the day.
Yeah. So you can delegate to a paid person. You can delegate to an intern, or you can delegate to your customer. So these are all really, really, really interesting things. And they've had a huge impact on me. Customers, I think, like it when you delegate stuff to them. If it gives them more control. You know, it helps them be more involved in the process and it keeps the process from getting slowed down. So all of these things are really, really great. But the big thing you need to understand is that when you have issues like this, when you're wasting time because something could either be eliminated, delegated, or automated in your business that would remove one of these terrible minimum wage or less items from your list of things that you do every year or every day even, to remove those things, you have to go through a curve. A productivity curve. And what I think that means, what it means to me, is that you have to have a little bit of time where you're working on your business, making no money. As a result of spending the time to build the system or make the form or teach the intern, as a result of doing that, you don't make money for just a little bit as you invest in that system. But as a result, immediately after that, your hourly rate goes up. It might only go up 10 cents an hour or might go up 5 cents an hour, but you are empowered to give yourself a raise by removing these less than minimum wage tasks from your list of things that you do. If you want to make more per hour, you have to remove things that make less than what you want to per hour from your list of things that you do. I don't care what business you're in, you have to do that.
Have you ever actually sat down and thought about where your next client will come from? Most freelancers don't. Because most freelancers' number one strategy for getting new clients is something called hope marketing. And if that sounds like you, you're not alone. Most freelancers think that just by putting out great work, clients will come banging down your door to hire you. Now, while you obviously do need to be good at what you do, we both know that this strategy does not work. Otherwise, your calendar would be 100% booked solid with amazing projects from your ideal clients. So to help you with this fight against hopium addiction, I'm excited to announce that our flagship coaching program, Clients by Design, has finally opened up applications again. This transformational coaching journey is not a one-size-fits-all. It's tailor-made just for you. We'll do a deep dive into your business to see what's missing, and we'll lay out a step-by-step roadmap to guide you over the next 6 to 8 months. And here's the best part. We don't just give you the plan and send you on your way. We give you personal one-on-one help so you never get stuck. And we make sure you actually follow through with something called our absolute accountability system. So if you're ready to stop relying on hope marketing and ready to start building your own client acquisition machine so you can get a steady flow of clients, then it's time to step up and apply for Clients by Design and see if you're a good fit. Just go to sixfigurecreative.com/coach. And I'll be the first to say that this program is not for everyone. So far, we've only accepted about 25% of those who apply. So if you want to find out if you're a good fit, just go to sixfigurecreative.com/coach and fill out the application. Now here's our show.
I'll also make a point here. I've mentioned this on the podcast in the past, but when we talk about eliminating things, sometimes it could be entire income streams from your studio that you are eliminating because they are below what your hourly worth is. And instead of hiring it out, instead of trying to systemize it or automate it or hire interns, you may be better off just cutting it out from your business altogether, period. Because every single thing you try to do in your business is a distraction to what it is. If it's not exactly what you're best at and what would push the needle forward, it's a distraction to the thing that is going to push the needle forward. So in my own studio in 2015, I had decided or discovered that 60% of my income, 70% of my income came from mixing work. 30% of my income came from tracking and editing. But the reverse was true. Although 70% of my income came from mixing, 30% of my time was spent doing that. And so what I decided to do was just completely remove tracking and editing from the services that I offer. I stopped letting bands come into my studio, live with me for 5 weeks, record with me, have me edit everything. And that cut out an entire $40,000, $50,000 a year revenue stream for my studio, which sounds ridiculous. But at the end of the day, I was able to save so much time on a week-to-week basis, literally cutting out 30, 40 hours a week from my workload, my 70-hour a week workload, and then allocate that time into other areas. Some of it was spent just enjoying my life a little bit more. A lot of it was spent building other revenue streams, like in real estate and in my courses and stuff. A lot of that time is also spent increasing my workload for mixing for 2015, 16, 17. I've cut back on a little bit more recently now so I can focus on what I'm doing with the Six Figure Home Studio. But all of this to say, I would be so much further behind than where I am now had I not decided to just cut that out completely, say I'm done recording bands and focus on mixing and mastering and only mixing and mastering for a lot of that time.
Man, that's awesome. And I get excited when I hear you talk about that because it's not just taking that list and cutting out all the minimum wage things. Sometimes it might be crossing out the second highest paying gig that you continually do on that list and recognizing I spend 80% of my time doing this particular task, but I only make 20% of my income doing that. So I'm going to remove that from my list, even though I'm making a lot of money off of that, so I can focus on something that's better.
Yeah, I mean, that revenue stream I cut out, I was making $40 an hour or so doing what I was doing, but I still had to cut it out because it was less than what I could be earning.
Yeah. So a big thing I like to think about here is this concept of your calling. What were you made to do? And when you probably weren't made to be a multitasking, stressed out, unhealthy studio owner.
That was me. That was my most stressed out years of my life was tracking and editing and lodging bands. I should throw that in there because that was a huge part of it. It was the most stressed out time. That's where, you know, 2011, we already talked about in the podcast, the depressive time. That was, a lot of that was tied to the workload with that. That was my most, I would just say high strung. My attitude was all time worst. I would say like the improvement I've had on my like outlook on life and just overall attitude and how I treat others has risen exponentially since 2015 when I recorded my last band.
Yeah. So I think a great place to bring this to is make the list. Write out all the things that you do. And I would say there's a couple interesting pieces of information you need to know for each job. One, what do you make per hour doing it? Two, what percentage of your time does it use up? Three, can it be eliminated, delegated, or automated? And four, I think there's this really important thing that we haven't talked about yet is, does it give you life?
Yeah, I was going to say that. How much do you enjoy it?
Yeah. And I know for me, you know, my story is really similar. I was producing, you know, 10 years ago or so, I was producing, mixing, editing. I was the all singing, all dancing singer, songwriter, producer. And what I found was that I loved mastering. It was the most fun thing that I did. And so in addition to the fact that I was being paid better when I mastered, it was a pretty easy decision to say, well, I like this. It's fun. It gives me life. It's fascinating. And it pays better. Okay, well, in order to have more time to focus on mastering, I'm going to stop accepting mixing projects, or I'm going to stop accepting tracking projects. So, man, these are all important things. If just make the list and get an idea of how is your time broken down, what's pulling you down, what's keeping you from making more. And the only way you're going to move forward is crossing things out on that list, either by delegation, automation, or elimination.
One thing with that is, there's not always going to be a crossover between the things you really like to do and the things you should be doing, because I'll use an example, drum editing. I had this weird love of drum editing. I actually liked drum editing.
You psychopath.
I was good at it. It was therapeutic to me for some weird reason, because 80% of the time I could be listening to a podcast or listening to music and kind of just zone out to this meditative state. But at the end of the day, I can hire someone at $15 an hour to do that as good or better than I can do it myself. So there's literally no reason for me to do it. I don't enjoy it so much that I'm going to go out of my way to earn $15 an hour to do that. That's just ridiculous. So you have to kind of balance the other things that you're looking at within what we just went over there is, yeah, you may enjoy it. And yeah, it may give you life a little bit, but at the end of the day, you shouldn't be doing some of these things on that list. So There's an exercise that I stole from a guy named Chris Ducker.
I like him.
Yeah, I like him too. He has this thing called the three lists of freedom. You can kind of run your own list through this criteria, but the first list is the things you hate to do. That's the things that, you know, just a list of things you hate to do. The second list is the things you are not good at doing. And the third list is the things that you know you shouldn't be doing. Those are the three lists of freedom. And sometimes you'll have the same thing on all three lists, but that's the list you start on to really start getting rid of some of these tasks, either delegating, eliminating, or automating.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we're going to kind of take a hard curve here real quick. I think one of the other things that we can do that we haven't talked about is when you're trying to earn more per hour, one of the big ideas here is providing a more valuable service. How can you up the value that you provide to the client without taking a hit on, oh my gosh, I have to spend all my money on outsourcing? So let me tell you a little story. One of the things that I used to do when I was producing, and let me just kind of bring up, I had no idea what I was doing as a producer. I didn't know I was so bad at it until I hadn't done it for like 5 years. But one of the things that I did that was actually decent is when I was trying to win a customer, I would do research on that customer. I'd ask them about their favorite bands and their favorite artists. And then what I would do is I would figure out what musicians played on their favorite records, what bass player played on their record, what drummer played on their favorite record. And then I would reach out through my friends or through, you know, cold call or through, you know, whatever. I would find a way to get in touch with musicians that played on some of their favorite records. And I'd reach out and say, hey, how much would you cost for me to send you some songs to record on? So there was one guy in particular.
So just to clarify, this is done remotely, not just people in your city?
A little bit of both. So sometimes we would go down to, you know, say Nashville and we'd book a nice studio and we'd hire studio musicians.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I'm like, I'm in Nashville and this is a great city for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would recruit the dream team and we'd go to a studio and we'd record tracks. There was a guy who plays organs. There was a guy who plays the organ for Paul McCartney. His name's Gabe Dixon. He has this band called Gabe Dixon Band. He's unbelievable. I had a client who was obsessed with Gabe Dixon. So I figured out how to get a hold of Gabe Dixon. And I asked Gabe Dixon how much it would cost for him to record Hammond organ parts remotely for us. And it was really reasonable. It was well within my client's budget. And when I pitched, hey, we should record a record together. And oh, by the way, what would you say if I told you we could get Gabe Dixon to play Hammond organ? The client lost their mind. They went nuts. Oh, you're hired. Absolutely. Let's do it. So here's the thing. I'm upping the quality of my final product. I'm upping the value I'm providing. And I'm also presenting my client with a dream scenario.
And how much work was that for you? It was minimal work for you to do that.
Almost none. I mean, Gabe was so unbelievable. Like I barely had to mix the stuff. I mean, it just came back as these files. He sent us three takes and we were like, can we just leave all three of them on? Like, this is awesome. So we picked a take. We sort of comped them together a little bit. And that was it. I think I might have put a little bit of reverb on it. It was barely any work at all. But the client lost their mind for it because the tracks were unbelievable. There is such an amazing opportunity to outsource and deliver a higher level of quality today than there ever has been in history. It's really, really, really easy to find great studio musicians who will record tracks remotely for you for peanuts. Really, really easy. And a call out to one of me and Brian's good friends, Dane of CustomTracks.com.
There's a Custom-Tracks.com.
Custom-Tracks.com. He has a bunch of studio musicians and you call him up and he brings the musicians in and they send you back the tracks. Bada bing, bada boom. It sounds like if you live in the middle of nowhere and there are no decent musicians, you can get decent musicians very easily. There are many, 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 many places where you can get any world-class musician to play any instrument that you can think of for a pretty low price. So if you're the type of guy who really buys into this lie that, well, you're not a ninja in the studio, you don't deserve respect unless you can do it all, and that's why I play drums, guitar, and bass and program synth and all that stuff on all my clients' records, why? Why? It's so easy to find people better than you at something. There's no way that you are the best in the world at every single thing.
Chances are you're mediocre at all of it, except maybe one thing.
Yeah. And here's the thing. When you start to cross these things off your list, like these studio musicians have, you can get freaky good at something. When you only do one thing for 10,000 hours, you become a freak at it. You become, it's impossible to imagine how much better you could be if you only did one thing for 10,000 hours. You can do some superhuman stuff. So that's one of the things to think about too, is you're trying to up the value that you deliver to clients. One of the ways to do that is to delegate even the musicianship to world-class players and to create that experience for your clients by assembling a good team. Back in the day, what a producer did was assemble a team of amazing musicians.
And look at Motown.
Look at Motown. Berry Gordy, most successful producer of all time. What he did better than anybody else was he assembled a team.
Owner of the first six-figure home studio.
Yeah.
Seven-figure. I mean, honestly, he was making bank.
It's probably eight at this point. Like, he's a freak. But what one of the things that he could do better than you and way better than me and way better than Brian Hood was he could assemble a team created that they had a system of, like, they would literally walk down to the high school, they'd find a high school kid that they thought had potential, and they would train them all the way from start to finish on how to be a rock star. That's how Diana Ross got started.
We need to throw this book recommendation in here, because you're the one that got me on that book.
Yeah, there's an autobiography by Berry Gordy, the guy that founded Motown. It's called To Be Loved. You want to read, like, about a killer home studio guy who took an $800 loan and turned it into the most successful music empire ever.
Yeah, $100+ million empire.
Yeah, I mean, easily. And not only that, you got to keep in mind, he was black in the 1960s.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy. He took over white radio. He's amazing. He's my freaking hero.
It's insane how he did it too.
Yeah, so, but he built a team. And that's, you know, these people that build these amazing businesses, yes, they're good technicians. Yes, Berry Gordy did some mixing behind the board, and he was pretty good at it. But more importantly, if he had a list of all the things that he did to make money, the thing that made him the most money wasn't engineering a record, wasn't plugging in microphones, it wasn't selecting the correct preamp to get the most beautiful timbre out of a vocalist.
God, no.
It was building a team and outsourcing and training people up so that he had a machine that created awesome products.
Yeah, that was his sundial.
Yeah, that was his sundial. Oh, bringing it back home with the sundial. Love it.
I think this is a good place to start wrapping this up and kind of giving some actionables on different things you could consider outsourcing and maybe touch on some specifics on each of these things, if it makes sense. But at least giving them a list of things to consider removing from your life.
Here's some ideas on things you could outsource right away. If you are a good producer but not a great mix engineer and you know it, you might think about outsourcing mixing. A great way to do that is to take one song and to talk various mixers into doing a free or very cheap mixing sample, maybe not even of the whole song, to get an idea of which one you like the most.
I will say that I don't ever do those. When people come to me, I'm adamant about not doing test mixes unless it's for a big label project. But there are people that are willing to do it. And if you can find those people, it is a way to show an artist, hey, this is what it could sound like if you're willing to pay this person's fee, and it's nothing out of your pocket. All you're doing is sending out a song to someone for a free test mix, if someone's willing to do it, and they're going to send you back the test mix. The artist is going to hear how good it could be, and then it's up to the artist to pay that fee if they want to do it.
Yeah, and you up your quality, you get a better sounding final product, and every client that you have in the future, you will have had because you had delivered a better product to your last client. It's a big deal.
Absolutely.
So number two here, this is a huge one. It's easy. Editing. You are a good enough teacher to teach someone how to edit audio just as well as you can. Editing audio is pretty easy most of the time. Unless you're doing extremely crazy vocal comping or extremely crazy drum editing.
Yeah. In the metal world, it can be the case.
Yeah, which it can be the case. So this, you know, none of these are blanket statements, but there's probably someone within walking distance of where you are right now who would be willing to learn from you and do it for either free or minimum wage.
So true.
So true. Number three, vocal comping, pinch editing. The vocals, obviously, are the heart of any song that has vocals. It can be murder to go through and do auto-tuning and, you know, comping and all this stuff.
And alignment.
Yeah, an alignment. There are tons of people who do this for a living. And if you're spending 30 hours a song doing this sort of stuff, I know a lot of people that spend inordinate amounts of time doing this, it's probably not the thing that you were created to do.
Yeah, you're either great at this or you're not. even if you are great at this, you may not be fast at it. I was one of the people that was actually very good at this, but I was very slow at this. It would take me 6+ hours to do one song if there was a lot of vocal tracks and a lot of stuff going on. And it's because I'm very slow at it. And so if you look at people who do this for a living, they've put their 10,000 hours in. They do vocal comping, pitch correction, vocal alignment, everything. They're able to do it 10 times faster than you because that's all they do. They're able to charge a reasonable rate. Say, I'm not going to give exact specifics because it's going to vary from person to person to person. And you can find someone who can do it at a reasonable price. That's the only thing that matters. A reasonable price and do it as good or better than you, even if you are already great at it. So you need to start getting rid of some of these things that you're stuck on doing because you think that you're the only one that can do it. And that's one of the biggest things that hurdles that I had to get over was thinking that only I can do it as good as I can do it. No one else can do it as good as me. That's the biggest lie by far that we tell ourselves when it comes to getting rid of some of these tasks is that no one can do it as good as I can. And I promise you there are people that are better than you at everything you do.
Yeah. Well, specifically, it's not a slight on anyone's ability. If anyone niches down and only does one thing and you haven't been doing only one thing, there's an almost 100% chance that they're better at it than you are.
And kind of going back to the Berry Gordy conversation, he was a decent songwriter and he had some hits that he had written, but his big thing was putting the team together. And so what he had done is found all of these people who are fantastic at exactly what he needed, especially once he got to the bigger level. I mean, there's a huge difference between running a six-figure home studio and a $150 million company. Like there is a huge difference in the skill set you need to do those two things. And he was great at both of those because he built a team at all these levels. When he got to the $100 million corporate level, he started hiring in the CFO. You know, all of the people that are going to help run an organization of that level, he knew how to build the team and he was great at leading the team. And that's ultimately what got him to where he was. And so when you start looking at your business as you're the CEO of your studio, you get that mindset and you stop thinking about, okay, I'm going to pitch correct this and then I'm going to edit this and then I'm going to comp this and then I'm going to do this and I'm going to help the set band write and then I'm going to lodge the band. You can still do a lot of these things if you want. But at the end of the day, if someone is a better team builder, if someone makes use of these individual specialists who are incredible at their one thing, you're going to have a much better product at the end of the day. You're going to have much less headaches at the end of the day. And you're going to have probably a much bigger business at the end of the day than the person who does literally everything. So let's continue on this list here, Chris.
Absolutely. So drum editing is a great one. Drum editing is super time consuming. But it's also very easy to teach. Very easy to teach. There are a lot of drummers out there who would absolutely love to make a little bit of money on the side by doing drum editing.
That's something someone can do on tour. A touring artist, touring musician who understands Pro Tools or a DAW, a general DAW, they can do drum editing on the road and they'll be happy to earn money from their laptop in their van while they're not doing anything else.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. That's one of the things I used to do. There was a guy named Ben Shive who I hired to play keyboards on a record. And Ben Shive had a little MIDI keyboard plugged into his laptop, and he did the tracks for the record while riding in the back of a van in between shows. And he did a great job. They were incredible keyboard parts.
With a little tiny MIDI keyboard and the stuff you have today as far as sample libraries,
yeah,
there's an incredible amount of stuff you can do with just those two things.
Yeah, so that's a big thing to keep in mind here, is that for many people in this industry, they get paid a lot at night to perform, and they don't make jack squat during the day. They're riding in a van from show to show to show, and they would be wicked pumped if you reached out to them and asked them, hey, can you plug your bass into a little interface and record bass parts while you're driving down I-75? You know, they're going to do it for nothing. It'll be so cheap.
Yeah.
And they're going to do a lot better than your buddy Steve, who bought a bass at a pawn shop 2 years ago.
That sounds oddly specific, Chris.
Maybe. That might be related to a real experience I had.
All right, so let's go on down this list here. Now let's move to number 5, which is mix prep. This is something that I hold near and dear to my heart because, and I've talked about this in the past, when you set up a mix project or when you mix a song from start to finish, mixing and mastering, if you walk through that exercise that I talked about, when you're thinking through from start to finish, what do you do with the bands in the studio? When you think about this through the lens of mixing and mastering, 80%+ of the project is what I would consider non-creative tasks when it comes to mixing and mastering.
Amen.
And if you can systemize, create a checklist of exactly what you want done, the exact way you want it done, and then hand that off to an assistant. I pay my assistant $30 an hour, which I think is a very fair rate. I could probably get it cheaper than that, but I'm not trying to get the cheapest person in the world. I'm trying to get someone that I can trust, that I don't have to handhold and check every single thing that they do. I know they're going to do it the way I want it to do it. $30 an hour is a great price to pay for that, and he earns a decent amount of money doing that. But he does a ton of the work for me when it comes to the non-creative, repetitive, what I would consider boring tasks. He'll do it, you know, after work at night. He has a day job, he'll do it after work, and then I can open up the session, and all I have to do is mix. I don't have to do all this BS that just wastes time. And so mix prep is a great way to save a ton of time if you're the type of person that does mixing and mastering. It's a ton of time wasted on just basic, monotonous, low-value tasks. So mix prep, easy thing to outsource.
Yeah, I just think the way that you do that's super impressive. And it's really cool that you have found a way to have consistency so that when you show up to mix, that you know that the vocal track's going to be a certain color and it's going to be called a certain name.
Oh, yeah.
That your go-to chain of plugins or whatever is already on that vocal.
My starting point is there, and all I have to do is determine where I want to go from there. Yep.
Yeah, dial it in. That's amazing. So number six is business-related stuff. There's a million of these.
We're not going to cover all of them just for brevity's sake, but when it comes to your business, I talked about, yes, you're getting paid $500 a song to do full production, mixing, mastering, editing, tracking, whatever. But the thing that's going to drive your hourly worth down more than anything is all this miscellaneous business stuff that you have to do. That is very important. I'm not going to say it's going to drag your numbers down, but it's going to bring it down lower than what you think it is. Because taxes, you have to do taxes at the end of the year. You have to do your bookkeeping. You have to do, if you're doing advertising, we already talked about all these different areas. I promise you, no matter what it is, there is a specialist who does this already, a CPA. My CPA does my taxes for me. I have software that basically automates my bookkeeping. I have an assistant that does all of my email management. And so my workload in these areas that I consider not my specialty, my workload is greatly reduced, thus allowing me to focus on only the things that Brian Hood does well. I don't like referring to myself in third person, but I just did. This is what you made me do, Chris. But you see what I'm saying is there's a lot of different areas that you can outsource in the business related aspects. And this is kind of stuff you have to determine on your own, because it just opens up a whole world of opportunities.
Yeah. And the point here is that you can then focus on your calling. You can focus on the one thing that you do better than anybody else by getting rid of the stuff that you don't need to do. So the last item, as far as outsourcing goes, is near and dear to my heart. And I'm going to be painfully direct on this one for you guys, is mastering. Most hits that you've heard on the radio in most genres for the past 50 years were not mixed and mastered by the same guy. They were mixed by someone and mastered by somebody else.
Yeah, my genre is that weird one genre where it's a little different, where you see a lot of guys mixing and mastering the same track. It's actually moving away from that, though. I will say that. So,
well, the big way that you can outsource mastering, and I'm going to pitch you guys here on something, is you can have what's called a mastering contest. Many mastering engineers will give you one free sample, including me. And basically what that looks like is you send them one song, they master a portion of it for free, and you see what you think. And so I just got off the phone with somebody who is editing our podcast right now, who sent me a song to see what it would sound like. And he had been mastering it himself. And I mastered a sample and sent it back, and he was pretty surprised that it sounded so much better than what he thought it could sound like. So if you are thinking about outsourcing mastering, the best thing to do is to have a mastering contest. And all you need to do is find a couple people that you think might be able to master better than you can and send them all the same song. Get the songs back from them, mastered, and compare the results. That's it.
Winner take all.
Yeah. It's really easy. It's free in most cases. And you get a good idea of either A, are you already really good at mastering and you don't need help with that? Or B, holy crap, mastering engineer C was way better than everybody else and way better than me. And oh my gosh, I can afford him. So the other big thing here is, and I tell everyone to do this, is if you produce lots of artists, never feel bad sending a song from an artist to me for a free sample. I'll do a free sample, one free sample for every artist. So I have producers that'll send me a sample every couple weeks. I'll send it back. They'll show their artists, and their artists will say, oh my gosh, I will absolutely spring for mastering. I'll take care of this. I'll pay for it. And so it's not coming out of the producer's pocket. It's coming out of the artist's pocket.
We talked about that earlier. We talked about where with the mixing contest, it's the same with the mastering contest. You send it out to several people. You give it to the artist. They have heard, oh my gosh, this is so much better than I thought. And then it's like, okay, for X amount more, you can have that. And they're the ones paying for it. It's not out of your pocket. So that's one way to add value to the project without it coming out of your own pocket.
Yeah, it's huge. And the big thing about mastering that makes it really unique is it affects every single thing that you did. It's the last stage before the song gets released. So good mastering has the ability to amplify, quite literally, but also figuratively, the quality of the entire song. And the big thing to keep in mind there is if you aren't good at mastering or you're mediocre at it, when you try to get a new client, you're going to show them the last project you worked on, right? Check out the song I mixed and mastered for this guy. If it sounds worse than it could, you will be able to charge less. Not only that, you have less chance of winning that customer. So mastering contests are just this easy, super duper low-hanging fruit as far as outsourcing, because it's really easy to figure out what kind of quality it will bring to the table. And when you show an artist, at least in my experience, when you show an artist a good master, when they've only been listening to the mix and maybe a test master, most artists are at that point are like, oh my gosh, we're almost done. This sounds beautiful. I will absolutely spring for it. So if you're thinking about doing a mastering contest, here's my hard ask. Check out chrisgrahammastering.com, C-H-R-I-S-G-R-A-H-A-M, mastering. And there's a big old before and after player there, so you can hear before and after samples of my work. And there's a big old red button. And if you click it, it'll walk you through how to send me a song, and I'll master a sample for free.
And like I said before, this is all about building your team. If you have a good mixing engineer in your pocket, if you're not great at it, if you have a good mastering engineer in your pocket, if you're not great at it, if you're only focused on the one thing that you do better than anyone else, or at least better than the people in your immediate area or your immediate competitors, and you're working towards being the best in the country at that, then focus on eliminating the things that you're not great at by finding a team that will do it great. So Chris Graham, good guy to add to your team, I think.
For sure. Well, and back to the Barry Gordy conversation, you know, you think about Barry Gordy's ability to build a team. You know, like he's, if we could get him as a guest on this podcast, well, it's probably the best guy in the world we could get. But you think about Barry Gordy's team, and there's one guy that jumps out in particular, and it's this bass player named James Jamerson. When you think of the signature bass lines in a Motown song, you're probably thinking of James Jamerson. He was instrumental to Barry Gordy building the Motown dynasty. And if you remove James Jamerson from Motown, Motown's totally different. Totally different. So that building a team thing, you can find people that become an instrumental part of your team. And when you've got 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 or 50 people that are all part of your team that all do one thing better than anybody else on earth that you've been able to find, or that do it with better chemistry with each other, there's room for magic there.
Yeah. There was probably one or two songwriters that were accountable for 80% of his hits.
It's true.
And if he didn't have those one or two songwriters, the songs you know and love from Motown era would not exist.
Yeah. And it's the same thing when you think about out in California in the 60s, the bands that were playing on the Beach Boys record, same thing. Someone built an amazing team, and there were specific musicians, specific mix engineers that crafted, quote unquote, the sound. And that became the product that took over the world. Anytime that you look at a revolution in music, it wasn't one guy. It was a team. If you are trying to do this on your own and be the guy and feel respected and feel, you know, like you're the man, it's an uphill battle, and it's probably not going to work unless you are a one in a billion genius. The more important skill here is to be a clock builder. Not to be able to look at the sun and tell time, but to be able to build sundials and to build this team and to create systems and lower the bar so that many people can work together to make something awesome.
So that is it for this episode of the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast. I don't know about you, but I got a ton from this episode. There are things that light bulbs that went off in my head when listening back to this episode. And I know that hopefully you had those light bulb moments as well. Just one final reminder, if you missed the workshop, the live workshop I did yesterday, and you want to watch the replay, it is important that you go to the sixfigurehomestudio.com/replay, R-E-P-L-A-Y, within the next 48 hours. After that, we're taking the replay down. You only have 48 hours to watch the replay if you want to watch that. And again, the workshop title was How to Make a Living from Your Existing Audio Skills Without the Need for a Fancy Studio or Expensive Gear.
So next week, our episode is all about niching down. So many people have asked me how to find a niche. How do I niche down? Or they have this lie that they tell themselves that if they niche down, they're going to lose money. And I'm here to tell you that that is not the case. And I'm excited for the next week's episode because it's going to be enlightening for a lot of people. And it's going to be extremely helpful for those of you who have no specific niche that they're a part of. If you are a generalist, if you try to speak to everyone, you're going to speak to absolutely no one. So stay tuned for next week's episode, which will be out next Tuesday. Until next time, happy hustling. Whoa.